Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again from Washington. It's time to learn and improve your American English skills. Today we go back into the classroom with Jonathan Evans and Jill Robbins to talk about some very important parts of speech that you need to know. Then, after today's lesson, we will give you a chance to use what you have learned as we hear about tourism in Iran, as restrictions against the country are eased. So, let's get to work. Here is part one.
From VOA, Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. In an earlier program, we talked about the relative pronouns who, that, and which. We promised to give you more details about how to use relative clauses. In this episode, we look at how the relative adverbs where, when, and why are used. Let's take a look at how relative adverbs work. An adverb is a word that describes a verb, an adjective, another adverb, or a sentence. It is often used to show time, manner and place, or degree. The relative pronouns where, when, and why act as adverbs when they join sentences or clauses. Take these two sentences.
This is a swimming pool. I used to swim in the pool.
Notice how you can put the sentences together with the word where. This is the pool where I used to swim.
Another way to say that is, this is the pool in which I used to swim. That is a formal way and usually only found in writing. We use the relative adverb where, to show the place of an action. The relative adverb when tells about the time of an action. Let's look at an example from The Logical Song by the rock group Supertramp.
When I was young, it seemed that life was so wonderful.
The singer says that life was wonderful when he was young. Later, he uses another adverb to show the world where he could be dependable. A more formal way to say that would be, they showed me a world in which I could be dependable.
We often want to tell the reason for an action. This week, President Obama visited Alaska and talked about melting ice. So much ice is melting in Alaska, he said, that sea levels are rising quickly. Here's how he put it.
The pace of melting is only getting faster. It's now twice what it was between 1950 and 2000. Twice as fast as it was just a little over a decade ago. And it's one of the reasons why sea levels rose by about 8 inches over the last century. And why are they projected to rise another 1 to 4 feet this century?
President Obama made one sentence from these two ideas.
Ice is melting very quickly. Sea levels rose about 8 inches in the last 100 years.
His speech has another clause with a relative adverb that combines these ideas.
Ice is melting very quickly. Scientists predict that sea levels will rise even more.
The words the reason or the reasons often appear before the relative adverb why, but sometimes they are left out, as in President Obama's speech.
And why are they projected to rise another 1 to 4 feet this century?
Are you ready to try some sentences on your own? Put together these sentences with relative adverbs.
The coffee house is in my neighborhood. He got a job in a coffee house.
Is your answer like this? The coffee house where he got a job is in my neighborhood. Here's another one.
I got home from work. I saw the dogs playing in the yard.
One way to put these ideas together is, I saw the dogs playing in the yard when I got home from work.
Finally, let's put these two sentences together.
The dogs frightened the cat. The cat ran up the tree.
Combine these ideas as, the dogs are the reason why the cat ran up the tree.
You will sometimes hear that instead of why after the word reason, as in,
the dogs are the reason that the cat ran up the tree.
We leave you with Earth, Wind, and Fire singing Reasons.
Ooh, baby, I can't find the reasons why my love, it won't disappear.
For Voice of America Learning English Everyday Grammar, I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Jonathan Evans.
You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. The United States and other countries plan to begin easing economic restrictions against Iran next year. The easing of sanctions is part of the deal between six world powers and Iran to limit its nuclear activities. Iranians hope that the end of travel restrictions will lead to more foreigners visiting the country. In London, travel agents say some people are already asking how they can visit Iran. Christopher Jones-Cruz reports.
Tour companies say very few non-Iranians have ever been to Iran. They describe the country as one of the unexplored jewels of the Middle East. They say the countryside is beautiful and its people friendly. Foreigners have stayed away from Iran since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. In 2013, just 90,000 people from North America and European Union countries visited Iran. Mehrdad Konsari works at Iran's Organization for Economic Reconstruction and National Reconciliation.
The difficulties we've had in Iran has definitely hurt the tourist industry in the sense that people are afraid to go. But those people that ventured and, you know, overcame these considerations and visited Iran were never sorry.
The nuclear deal reached in July is already helping to ease travel restrictions. Johnny Bielby founded Wild Frontiers Travel, a British travel agency. He says the agreement has led to an increase in interest in Iran.
Two things have happened since the nuclear deal. First of all, the Foreign Office had changed their advice against travel to Iran, and that's made it much simpler for people to get insurance and that sort of thing. So the numbers have gone up again. We've had to put on three extra departures this year alone to cope with the demand for the autumn season to Iran.
British traveller Bugsy Heath-Brown is joining one of those tour groups.
We decided to get on one of the first trips that we could to get out there, see the sights, meet the people before the big rush of the rest of the world.
Iran says it hopes to have 20 million visitors a year by 2025. Mr. Konsari says those tourists could spend up to $30 billion.
Now that this outside face of Iran is beginning to change, that I think the tourism offers a great opportunity for the Iranian economy.
Tour operators in the West say getting permission from Iranian officials to enter the country is still difficult. Sanctions are still in place, limiting the ability of banks in Iran to operate outside the country. As a result, most payments have to be made in cash. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. The World Health Organization reports that hundreds of millions of people have a mental health disorder, but receive little or no treatment. A new WHO report finds that very little of the money spent on healthcare goes to treating those with mental conditions. The WHO's Mental Health Atlas 2014 is the most complete look at the state of mental health around the world. It contains data from 171 countries, representing 95% of the world's population. The Atlas says that mental conditions are responsible for about 10% of the world's health burden. In other words, 10% of all people have a mental disorder. However, only 1% of the healthcare workforce worldwide is working in mental health. The report finds every country, area, age group, and part of society suffers greatly from mental disorders. Yet, it says, total spending on mental health is extremely low. It also says very few nurses and other healthcare specialists want to work in the mental health field. People of all levels of society can suffer from mental illness. However, the Atlas finds that the financial and healthcare divide between poor and rich countries is very wide. The report says there is, on average, one mental health care provider for every 100,000 people in poor and middle-income countries. The ratio in wealthy countries is one per 2,000 people. Worldwide spending on mental health also is very low. The report notes poor countries spend less than $2 per person each year on mental health, compared to more than $50 in wealthy countries. The WHO says mental health disorders are continuing to grow. They estimate that one in four people have a problem at some point in his or her life. The WHO warns health systems are failing to meet the needs of these people, and that failure to help people, it says, is having serious after effects. The WHO warns that depression will be the leading cause of disease burden by 2030. Data from the Mental Health Atlas 2014 shows 900,000 people took their own life each year. The report says suicide is the second most common cause of death among young people. It finds 3 out of 4 people with severe mental disorders receive no treatment. It also says people with mental health problems suffer a wide range of human rights violations. The WHO says it is better to treat people with mental disorders in a small community-based environment instead of something larger. Unfortunately, the organization notes that the majority of spending, about 82%,